A laugh put an end to them. There was a surly hobbit lounging over the low wall of the mill yard. He was grimy-faced and black-handed.
"Don't he like it, Sam?" he sneered. "But you always was soft. I thought you'd gone off in one of them ships you used to prattle about. Sailing, sailing. What do you want to come back for? We've work to do in the Shire now."
"So I see," said Sam.
"No time for washing, but time for wall-propping.
But see here, Master Sandeman, I've a score to pay in this village. And don't you make it any longer with your jeering, or you'll foot a bill too big for your purse."
Ted Sandeman spat over the wall.
"Garn," he said. "You can't touch me. I'm a friend of the boss's. But he'll touch you all right if I have any more of your mouth."
"Don't waste any more words on the fool, Sam," said Frodo. "I hope there are not many more hobbits that have become like this. It would be a worse trouble than all the damage the men have done."
"You're dirty and insolent, Sandeman," said Merry, "and also very much out of your reckoning. We're just going up the hill to remove your precious boss. We've dealt with his men."
Ted gaped, for at that moment he first caught sight of the escort that, at a sign from Merry, now marched over the bridge. Dashing back into the mill, he ran out with a horn and blew it loudly.
"Save your breath," laughed Merry. "I've a better."
Then, lifting up his silver horn, he winded it, and its clear call rang over the hill, and out of the holes and sheds and shabby houses of Hobbiton, the hobbits answered, and came pouring out, and with cheers and loud cries they followed the company up the road to Bag End. At the top of the lane the party halted, and Frodo and his friends went on, and they came at last to the once-beloved place. The garden was full of huts and sheds, some so near the old westward windows that they cut off all their light. There were piles of refuse everywhere. The door was scarred, the bell-chain was dangling loose, and the bell would not ring. Knocking brought no answer. At length they pushed, and the door yielded. They went in. The place stank and was full of filth and disorder. It did not appear to have been used for some time.
"Where's that miserable Lotho hiding?" said Merry.
They'd searched every room and found no living thing save rats and mice.
"Shall we turn on the others to search the sheds?"
"This is worse than Mordor," said Sam.
"Much worse, in a way. It comes home to you, as they say. Because it is home, and you remember it before it was all ruined."
"Yes, this is Mordor," said Frodo. "Just one of its works. Saruman was doing its work all the time, even when he thought he was working for himself. And the same with those that Saruman tricked, like Lotho."
Merry looked round in dismay and disgust.
"Let's get out," he said.
"If I'd known all the mischief he'd caused, I should have stuffed my pouch down Saruman's throat."
No doubt, but you didn't, and so I'm able to welcome you home."
There, standing at the door, was Saruman himself, looking well-fed and well-pleased. His eyes gleamed with malice and amusement. A sudden light broke on Frodo.
"Sharky!"
he cried. Saruman laughed.
"So you've heard the name, have you? All my people used to call me that in Isengard, I believe. A sign of affection, possibly. But evidently you didn't expect to see me here."
"I did not," said Frodo, "but I might have guessed. A little mischief in a mean way.
Gandalf warned me that you are still capable of it."
"Quite capable," said Saruman.
"And more than a little. You made me laugh. You hobbit lordlings, riding along with all those great people, so secure and so pleased with your little selves. You thought you'd done very well out of it all, and could now just amble back and have a nice quiet time in the country. Saruman's home could be all wrecked, and he could be turned out, but no one could touch yours. Oh, no! Gandalf would look after your affairs."
Saruman laughed again.
Not he. When his tools have done their task, he drops them. But you must go dangling after them, dawdling and talking, and riding round twice as far as you needed.
Well, thought I, if they're such fools, I'll get ahead of them and teach them a lesson. One ill turn deserves another.
It would have been a sharper lesson if only you'd given me a little more time and more men. Still, I've already done much that you'll find it hard to mend or undo in your lives, and it will be pleasant to think of that and set it against my injuries.
Well, if that's what you find pleasure in, said Frodo, I pity you. It will be a pleasure of my memory only, I fear. Go at once and never return.
The hobbits of the villagers had seen Saruman come out of one of the huts, and at once they came crowding up to the door of Bag End. When they heard Frodo's command, they murmured angrily,
"Don't let him go! Kill him! He's a villain and a murderer! Kill him!"
Saruman looked round at their hostile faces and smiled.
"Kill him," he mocked. "Kill him, if you think there are enough of you, my brave hobbits."
He drew himself up and stared at them darkly with his black eyes.
"But do not think that when I lost all my goods, I lost all my power. Whoever strikes me shall be accursed, and if my blood steams the shire, it shall wither and never again be healed."
The hobbits recoiled. But Frodo said, "Don't believe him. He's lost all his power, save his voice that can still daunt you and deceive you if you let him. But I will not have him slain. It is useless to meet revenge with revenge. It will heal nothing. Go, Saruman, by the speediest way."
"Worm! Worm!"
Saruman called, and out of a nearby hut came Wormtongue, crawling almost like a dog.
"To the road again, Worm," said Saruman. "These fine fellows and lordlings are turning us adrift again. Come along."
Saruman turned to go, and Wormtongue shuffled after him. But even as Saruman passed close to Frodo, a knife flashed in his hand, and he stabbed swiftly. The blade turned on the hidden mail coat and snapped. A dozen hobbits, led by Sam, leapt forward with a cry and flung the villain to the ground. Sam drew his sword.
"No, Sam," said Frodo. "Don't kill him even now, for he's not hurt me. And in any case, I don't wish him to be slain in this evil mood. He was great once, of a noble kind that we should not dare to raise our hands against. He has fallen, and his cure is beyond us. But I would still spare him, in the hope that he may find it." Saruman rose to his feet and stared at Frodo. There was a strange look in his eyes of mingled wonder and respect and hatred.
"You have grown, halfling," he said.
"Yes, you've grown very much.
You're wise and cruel. You have robbed my revenge of sweetness, and now I must go hence in bitterness, in debt to your mercy. I hate it and you.
Well, I go, and I will trouble you no more.
But do not expect me to wish you health and long life. You will have neither. But that is not my doing. I merely foretell."
He walked away, and the hobbits made a lane for him to pass, but their knuckles whitened as they gripped on their weapons. Wormtongue hesitated, and then followed his master.
"Wormtongue," called Frodo, "you need not follow him. I know of no evil you have done to me. You can have rest and food here for a while, until you're stronger and can go your own ways." Wormtongue halted and looked back at him, half prepared to stay. Saruman turned.
"No evil," he cackled. "Oh, no. Even when he sneaks out at night, it is only to look at the stars. But did I hear someone ask where poor Lotho is hiding? You know, don't you, Worm? Will you tell them?"
Wormtongue cowered down and whimpered.
"No, no."
"Then I will," said Saruman. "Worm killed your chief, poor little fellow, your nice little boss. Didn't you, Worm? stabbed him in his sleep, I believe. Buried him, I hope. The worm has been very hungry lately. No, worm is not really nice. You'd better leave him to me.
A look of wild hatred came into Wormtongue's red eyes.
You told me to. You made me do it, he hissed.
Saruman laughed.
You do what Sharky says always, don't you, Worm? Well, now he says, follow.
He kicked Wormtongue in the face as he groveled, and turned and made off. But at that something snapped. Suddenly Wormtongue rose up, drawing a hidden knife, and then with a snarl like a dog he sprang on Saruman's back, jerked his head back, cut his throat, and with a yell ran off down the lane. Before Frodo could recover or speak a word, three hobbit bows twanged, and Wormtongue fell dead. To the dismay of those that stood by, about the body of Saruman a grey mist gathered, and rising slowly to a great height like smoke from afar, as a pale, shrouded figure it loomed over the hill. For a moment it wavered, looking to the west, but out of the west came a cold wind, and it bent away, and with a sigh dissolved into nothing. Frodo looked down at the body with pity and horror, for as he looked, it seemed that long years of death were suddenly revealed in it, and it shrank, and the shriveled face became rags of skin upon a hideous skull. Lifting up the skirt of the dirty cloak that sprawled beside it, he covered it over and turned away.
"And that's the end of that," said Sam. "A nasty end, and I wish I needn't have seen it, but it's a good riddance."
"And the very last end of the war, I hope," said Merry.
"I hope so," said Frodo, and sighed. "The very last stroke. But to think that it should fall here, at the very door of Bag End. Among all my hopes and fears, at least I never expected that."
"I shan't call it the end till we've cleared up the mess," said Sam gloomily, "and that'll take a lot of time and work."
Chapter 9. The Grey Havens. The clearing up certainly needed a lot of work, but it took less time than Sam had feared. The day after the battle, Frodo rode to Mickle Delving and released the prisoners from the lockholes. One of the first that they found was poor Fredegar Bulger, fatty no longer. He'd been taken when the ruffians smoked out a band of rebels that he led from their hidings up in the Brockenbors by the hills of Skerry.
"You'd have done better to come with us after all, poor old Fredegar," said Pippin, as they carried him out, too weak to walk. He opened an eye and tried gallantly to smile.
"Who's this young giant with a loud voice?" he whispered. "Not little Pippin. What's your size in hats now?"
Then there was Lobelia. Poor thing, she looked very old and thin when they rescued her from a dark and narrow cell. She insisted on hobbling out on her own feet, and she had such a welcome, and there was such clapping and cheering when she appeared, leaning on Frodo's arm but still clutching her umbrella, that she was quite touched, and drove away in tears. She'd never in her life been popular before, but she was crushed by the news of Lotho's murder, and she would not return to Bag End. She gave it back to Frodo, and went to her own people, the Brace Girdles of Hardbottle. When the poor creature died next spring, she was after all more than 100 years old, Frodo was surprised and much moved. She had left all that remained of her money and of Lotho's for him to use in helping hobbits made homeless by the Troubles. So that feud was ended. Old Will Whitfoot had been in the lockholds longer than any, and though he'd perhaps been treated less harshly than some, he needed a lot of feeding up before he could look the part of mayor. So Frodo agreed to act as his deputy, until Mr. Whitfoot was in shape again. The only thing that he did as deputy mayor was to reduce the sheriffs to their proper functions and numbers. The task of hunting out the last remnant of the ruffians was left to Merry and Pippin, and it was soon done. The southern gangs, after hearing the news of the Battle of Bywater, fled out of the land and offered little resistance to the Thane. Before the year's end, the few survivors were rounded up in the woods, and those that surrendered were shown to the borders. Meanwhile, the labour of repair went on apace, and Sam was kept very busy. Hobbits can work like bees when the mood and the need comes on them. Now there were thousands of willing hands of all ages, from the small but nimble ones of the hobbit lads and lasses to the well-worn and horny ones of the gaffers and gammers. Before Yule, not a brick was left standing of the new sheriff houses or of anything that had been built by Sharkey's men. But the bricks were used to repair many an old hole to make it snugger and drier. Great stores of goods and food and beer were found that had been hidden away by the ruffians in sheds and barns and deserted holes, and especially in the tunnels at Mickle Delving and in the old quarries at Skerry, so that there was a great deal better cheer that Yule than anyone had hoped for. One of the first things done in Hobbiton, before even the removal of the new mill, was the clearing of the hill and Bag End, and the restoration of Bagshot Row. The front of the new sandpit was all levelled and made into a large sheltered garden, and new holes were dug in the southward face, back into the hill, and they were lined with brick. The gaffer was restored to number 3, and he said often, and did not care who heard it, "It's an ill wind as blows nobody no good, as I always say, and all's well as ends better." There was some discussion of the name that the new row should be given. Battle Gardens was thought of, or Better Smiles. But after a while, in sensible hobbit fashion, it was just called New Row. It was a purely Bywater joke to refer to it as Sharkey's End. The trees were the worst loss and damage, for at Sharkey's bidding they had been cut down recklessly far and wide over the shire, and Sam grieved over this more than anything else. For one thing, this hurt would take long to heal, and only his great-grandchildren, he thought, would see the shire as it ought to be. Then suddenly one day, for he had been too busy for weeks to give a thought to his adventures, he remembered the gift of Galadriel. He brought the box out and showed it to the other travellers, for so they were now called by everyone, and asked their advice. "I wondered when you'd think of it," said Frodo. "Open it." Inside it was filled with a grey dust, soft and fine, in the middle of which was a seed, like a small nut with a silver shale. "What can I do with this?" said Sam. "Throw it in the air on a breezy day and let it do its work," said Pippin. "On what?" said Sam. "Choose one spot as a nursery and see what happens to the plants there," said Merry. "But I'm sure the lady would not like me to keep it all for my own garden, now so many folk have suffered," said Sam. "Use all the wits and knowledge you have of your own, Sam," said Frodo, "and then use the gift to help your work and better it, and use it sparingly. There's not much here, and I expect every grain has a value." So Sam planted saplings in all the places where specially beautiful or beloved trees had been destroyed, and he put a grain of the precious dust in the soil at the root of each. He went up and down the shire in this labour, but if he paid special attention to Hobbiton and Bywater, no one blamed him. And at the end he found that he still had a little of the dust left, so he went to the 3-farthing stone, which is as near the centre of the shire as no matter, and cast it in the air with his blessing. The little silver nut he planted in the party field where the tree had once been, and he wondered what would come of it. All through the winter he remained as patient as he could, and tried to restrain himself from going round constantly to see if anything was happening. Spring surpassed his wildest hopes. His trees began to sprout and grow as if time was in a hurry and wished to make 1 year do for 20. In the party field a beautiful young sapling leapt up. It had silver bark and long leaves, and burst into golden flowers in April. It was indeed a Malorn, and it was the wonder of the neighbourhood. In after years, as it grew in grace and beauty, it was known far and wide, and people would come long journeys to see it, the only Malorn west of the mountains and east of the sea, and one of the finest in the world. Altogether, 1420 in the Shire was a marvellous year. Not only was there wonderful sunshine and delicious rain, in due times and perfect measure, but there seemed something more, an air of richness and growth, and a gleam of beauty beyond that of mortal summers that flicker and pass upon this middle earth. All the children born or begotten in that year, and there were many, were fair to see and strong, and most of them had a rich golden hair that had before been rare among hobbits. The fruit was so plentiful that young hobbits very nearly bathed in strawberries and cream, and later they sat on the lawns under the plum trees and ate until they had made piles of stones like small pyramids or the heaped skulls of a conqueror, and then they moved on. And no one was ill, and everyone was pleased, except those who had to mow the grass.